Please come to order. Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judges Werke, Conley, Smith, the Honorable Renee L. Werke presiding.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the WebEx proceedings for the Minnesota Court of Appeals, July 23rd, 2020. This is our last hearing of the day, and I have at least been alerted to the fact that we will have a splitting of time with respondent counsel. Can someone speak to that, please?
That's correct, Your Honor. This is Tom Boyd. I'm representing respondent Xcel Energy. And Mr. Bowman and I have agreed to split time. Mr. Bowman is representing the commission. He will argue first for 5 minutes, and I'll follow with the remaining time.
All right, 5 minutes and 10 minutes. In all other respects, the Court of Appeal rules remain in place. When you begin your argument, please introduce yourself and indicate which party you're speaking on behalf of. Appellant counsel, you will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to exercise that. I'm asking if you will mute your microphones when you're not speaking, just to eliminate the possibility of background noise. With that said, I'll ask our marshal to call the case for consideration.
Next matter is A19-1785 and A20-0116 in the matter of Xcel's petition for approval of electric vehicle pilot program, and in re matter of Xcel Energy's petition for approval for of a residential EV subscription service pilot program.
Appellant counsel, Mr. Maratska, when you're ready, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Andrew Maratska on behalf of Relator Xcel Large Industrials.
For some reason, you've disappeared off the screen. Can you see all of us?
I can see all of you.
Can you hear me? We can hear you just fine.
Okay. This appeal raises a threshold question of an agency's authority to act, and therefore arises under In re Hubbard and In re Otter Tail Power. Here, the agency is the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, and its authority to act is constrained by two undisputed facts. First, the parties agree that the scope of the commission's jurisdiction is resolved under the term service, which is defined in Minnesota statutes 216B.02 subdivision 6 as, quote, the installation, removal, or repair of equipment or facilities, or delivering or measuring electricity, end quote. Second undisputed fact, with respect to delivering or measuring under the term service, both delivering electricity and measuring the quantity thereof are complete at the customer's meter. This appeal arises in the context of a new...
Counsel, why do you say that that's agreed to? Complete and then can't go beyond? I mean, is that agreed to? It seems... Complete at the meter does not seem to be in agreement to me.
It is both, Your Honor, it is both measured by the meter and delivered to the meter. Addendum page 39 acknowledges that this service, which where does delivery and measurement occur? Delivered to the meter and measured at that point. That is what the statute states.
Wait, I guess I'm a little bit confused. The statute doesn't say at the meter. So what is it that you're saying is agreed to by the parties, that it's complete? And I guess by complete, you mean ends at and can't go beyond the meter. How is that agreed to by the parties?
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. The parties agree that electricity is delivered to the meter. That is without dispute. The parties also agree that electricity, that the quantity of that electricity is measured by the meter.
Okay, so, but the delivery, I think, yeah, the question I think is whether going beyond the meter also constitutes delivery. Isn't that an issue?
So I think the best way to characterize the party's positions is that Relator believes that delivery and measurement are to the customer, which is complete at the meter, and respondents assert that delivery and measurement occur at the ultimate electricity consuming device.
Right, or they may, I guess. It's sort of like if I order a couch, it could be delivered to my front door, or they could bring it in to my living room. And I guess both of them are deliveries. One ends earlier than the other. They both come to my property, but what that means for purposes of statute is sort of what's at issue, right? Does it have to end at the meter?
Right.
And I'll let you go ahead. I just was a little bit confused about that, it being undisputed. So go ahead with your argument.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say that I'll proceed. The standard of review here on issues 1 and 2 is de novo. Under longstanding Minnesota law, whether an agency acted within its statutory authority is a question of law that's reviewed de novo under Hubbard, Quest, and other cases. None of the cases cited by respondents in their attempt to claim agency deference involved threshold jurisdictional issues. To be clear, agency deference and a potential presumption of correctness apply only to substantive decisions, not on threshold jurisdictional questions. In fact, in Hubbard, the Minnesota Supreme Court specifically stated that when it is confronted with a threshold question of whether the legislature granted an agency the authority to act, any suggestion of deference is misplaced. And in Otter Tail Power, the Minnesota Supreme Court reiterated this holding in Hubbard to conduct a de novo review on the issue of whether the commission acted within its statutory authority. So there's no legal basis to defer to the commission's construction here. Now, before getting into the arguments, I want to set the stage for the legal principles to be applied, as recently summarized by Otter Tail Power. First, the commission is a creature of statute. The legislature tells it what to do and how to do it. Second, the commission's authority may be stated either expressly in statute or implied from the express powers given to the commission by the legislature. Third, express authority needs to be set forth clearly and unambiguously. Fourth, any enlargement of express powers by implication must be fairly drawn and fairly evident from those powers expressly given by the legislature. Fifth, on the threshold jurisdictional question in this case, courts are reluctant to find implied authority. Indeed, the presumption is to resolve any doubt about the existence of an agency's authority against the exercise of authority. Under Quest, GH Holdings.
I guess here's my sort of most fundamental question, Mr. Muratska. So what do you believe the PUC should have done to comply with Minnesota Statute 216B02 Subdivision 6 in setting up these pilot programs? I mean, should they have like in the Minnegasco case, you know, they can't do appliance maintenance, so you got to set up your separate company, Home Service Plus, to run these pilot programs, you know, to do that. So what should they have done to set up these pilot programs instead of what they did do, you know, under your interpretation of the express language of the statute dealing with service? How should they have dealt with this, since you're saying they got this wrong? What should they have done instead?
Your Honor, thank you for the question. I think Minnegasco is a great example. If Xcel Energy wanted to form a non-regulated affiliate to invest in electric vehicle infrastructure behind the meter, there would be no objection from us for them to do so, because they would be expending shareholder dollars, and shareholders would bear the risk. It would not be ratepayer dollars, and ratepayers bearing the risk.
So you're saying, so this,
Muted, Judge Connolly.
Judge Smith. So you're saying then setting up these charging stations and this infrastructure and the batteries, that's just like appliance maintenance.
I'm saying it's similar in construct to appliance maintenance because you are authorizing the utility to conduct activities beyond the customer's meter.
How do you respond to the commission's statement that, well, you know, these charging batteries do measure electricity and therefore, you know, we get around the service that, you know, so there you go. So we comply with the statute. I mean, well, how do you, you know, if that's true and if that's supported by the record, wouldn't you don't you lose?
No, because of the fact that reading the statute in that fashion would lead to an absurd result. Because you, every appliance and you know, cell phone chargers, other things that we currently know for our own technologies. My iPhone can measure how much charge I have. Smart appliances can measure.
You know, it can measure. I mean, yes, I agree. You can look at your smartphone and it can tell me, you know, I got 10% left. But the question is, you know, I think that's a little different than if these electric batteries and charging stations can measure the amount of energy used in off-peak versus non-peak hours, then, you know, that's kind of like the meters that is in my house. So I guess that's, why is that wrong? I mean, the way I understand what you're saying, but let's go with the batteries can do that. So if they can, why under the express language definition of service, why isn't that enough?
Well, because you also have to consider the legislative, the statutory construct in which we're dealing with. We're dealing with the regulation of monopolies, right? Utility monopolies, and the legislature found that it was in the public interest to regulate monopolies in large part to prevent unnecessary duplication of generation, transmission, and distribution facilities that are in the public domain. So once you've delivered the product and the amount of the product that was delivered is measured, which XLI asserts occurs at the meter, if you go beyond that point, you are giving the commission the authority to regulate the activities in a household, and in a particular concern to the large industrials, the authority to have influence on strategic decisions such as the wiring within a business, whether or not to incorporate certain sizes of self-generation and other business operational impacts. That's the fundamental concern here, is that you really go down a very slippery slope. And what's interesting about the statute is that we know that electricity is delivered to the meter. We know it's measured at the meter. And so to assume that other devices beyond that point can also be included within the monopoly and the commission's jurisdiction is to assume a restarting, if you will, of the commission's jurisdiction that is different from and distinct from all other cases that the commission has previously decided. So it's a significant departure from prior precedent.
If this is not regulated in the fashion that's before us, This is a real simplistic question, and I hope you can answer it very succinctly. What is it that you're envisioning? I mean, can you just put it into very simple terms what you think this would look like?
Madam Chair, I think a perfect example of what it looks like is contained on the diagram that's set forth on page 14 of the commission's brief. And if I look at page 14 of the commission's brief, there's a picture, and the top line shows in green the utility ownership up to the service connection. After that, the customer, and after that, business as usual. So in the simplest terms, what we're asking for is a continuation of business as usual.
So, you know, I'm looking at that chart. So, I'm sorry, the chart show, this is how you want it to be, or this is how, or what, or this is wrong?
No, Your Honor, the first line of the, there are three lines. The first says where it's utilities in green under the service connection. And then after that, it's customer owned site supply infrastructure and charging equipment. That's business as usual. That's the line that we support. The other two are what the utility proposes in its fleet EV and public charging pilot. That's a change, and we oppose that change. We oppose the utility going beyond the service connection, beyond the meter, to start supplying EV supply infrastructure. And in the residential construct, which we see later in the commission's brief on page 21, there, what the utility is proposing to own is the charging equipment itself. So basically, what the utility is proposing to do here is supply, own, and get cost recovery for everything beyond the meter. And they even say on pages 30 and 32 of their brief that they get to do this regardless of location. So if this is
Maraska, your time has run out. If you want to sum up quickly.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't have anything to add other than we're seeking reversal of the commission's orders.
We'll come back to you for rebuttal. I guess we're turning to Mr. Bowman now for your argument.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Jeff Bowman. I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the state of Minnesota, and I represent the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. In my 5 minutes, I will be addressing the express authority of the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission to authorize utility ownership of the specific EV infrastructure at issue in this appeal. In approving the pilots, the commission examined the economic and environmental benefits of the programs and allowed Xcel to own and maintain EV charging infrastructure on customer premises behind the electric meter. Because the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission had express authority to permit such ownership, we ask that the commission's decision be affirmed.
Where is that express authority? I'm sorry, I missed your opening line.
So, Your Honor, the express authority comes from Minnesota Statute 216B 0.02 subdivision 6, and that's the definition of service. So,
okay, Minnesota, so we're back at the definition of service. There's nothing that says, sure, go ahead and own beyond the meter. What we're talking about is what service means. And I think, well, we're right. So, and that's the area that you want to focus on in your argument. So here's my question for you, if you could. All right, so there's a definition that applies to the entire chapter, which is that subdivision 6.02. And it says that it applies to the entire chapter. And this gets into that monopoly question, but I want to put it in terms of the actual statutory language. When we get later into electric utilities having monopolies within their service area, such that at least other utilities can't compete with them there under 0.40, We're talking about electric service. They have a monopoly over electric service. Okay. And electric service has a definition, I think, in point 3.8 that just reuses the term electric service. Here's my question. In your brief, you say, well, electric service means something different from service, that they're two entirely different things, and you shouldn't look, that electric service doesn't have to do anything to do with service as previously defined. What I find troubling about that argument is service is defined with respect to the whole chapter in subdivision 6. Why wouldn't that definition of service carry into the term electric service, which is later defined and uses that word? Yes. I think in your brief, you say that they're different, but I don't know why service as defined previously wouldn't carry that definition when it's used in a phrase later.
Hold that question just for a minute, Mr. Bowman. I'll give you more time to answer. Let me do a roll call. We have two attorneys that are no longer on the screen. I just want to make sure that at this point, Mr. Boyd is still on, as well as Mr. Maraska. Can you hear us?
Looks like Mr. And I can hear you.
Wait, who is the one that I can hear you? Mr. Boyd, are you there? Mr. Boyd, your screen has come up without your face. Can you hear us now? You're on mute.
I can hear you.
All right. All right, let's start. Let me start with Mr. Boyd because we're now on respondent time. Did you hear at all the question that was posed by Judge Smith?
I did, Your Honor.
Okay, and then Mr. Maratska, you weren't on the screen either. Were you able to hear?
Yes, I was, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I'm sorry for the interruption, but we've had this happen a couple of times today in other hearings. So we'll go ahead. Your time will not be interrupted, Mr. Bowman. You'll have a little extra time to answer the question, which I hope you haven't forgotten.
Your Honor, I don't think I've forgotten the question. And I think the answer is that first, we start with the presumption that when the legislature defines terms differently, that they have different meanings. And so if we were just going to have one definition of service, then there would be no need to separately define it in the geographic service provisions that are contained specifically in 216B.37 to 216B.44. The legislature chose to provide a specific definition that only applies to that specific Excel or utility service area provisions. And when you look at the entirety of 216B and what does service mean under 216B.02, and what are we talking about when we're looking at geographic service areas? And so looking comprehensively at the different statutory provisions, there's a reason that they're different definitions. So when we're looking at 216B.02 subdivision 6, the statute that we believe controls this case, you're looking at what services can be provided to customers. So what equipment, what facilities, and we're actually looking at, keep in mind, when we're talking about what services, what we're talking about is what assets can be used or what assets can the utility seek to earn a rate of return on. When we're talking about service, that's all we're talking about. Is it used and useful in providing service to a customer such that a utility should be able to earn a return on and of that investment? That is not the implication in 216B.37 through 216B.44. There we're looking at geographic service areas. And as you noted in your question, it's then specifically limited to service among electric utilities. So we're talking about furnishing service at retail in geographic boundaries and competition with other electric utilities. So that's why that statute doesn't apply.
And I agree with you. Speaking for myself, I don't think CPI and Lake Country do much for me. So you're going to own and service the charging batteries in the power stations. So how is that different from the appliance maintenance stuff in Minnegasco? Why is it different?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It's different because you have to look at the express language in 216B02 dealing with delivery or measurement of electricity. So here, all the EV pilots envision is in the make-ready infrastructure, you have electricity being delivered through conduit, through wiring, to a charger, to an electric vehicle. So it's clearly the delivery of measurement. There's nothing in the statute that limits it to a jurisdictional boundary of where that's at. And compare that to Minnegasco. So in Minnegasco, the distinction was that compliance repair into a customer's water heater wasn't sufficiently related to delivery and measurement of electricity. It doesn't matter that it was that, you know, at that point, the utility's offering was to the meter. You're looking at, is it related to delivery or measurement of electricity? You know, XLI's argument attempts to read additional language into the statute that simply isn't there. The only thing that the court needs to look at to resolve this issue is, does the specific infrastructure measure or deliver electricity? This is an intentionally flexible definition that encompasses a lot of different infrastructure. The legislature could have—
Mr. Bowman, you've now had ample time from what we went over, but please wrap up.
So just in conclusion, the legislature could have chosen to specifically define infrastructure and name them. It didn't. It gave a flexible definition that could apply to many different equipment and facilities that constitute electricity. And under the plain and unambiguous language of the statute, the commission applied it to the facts and circumstances of this case, and they had express authority to do so. For those reasons, Your Honors, we ask that the commission decision be affirmed.
Thank you. Turning to you, Mr. Boyd.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Thomas Boyd on behalf of respondent XL Energy. Just for the court's awareness, I don't see a clock. Oh, there it is. Needless to say, XL Energy respectfully requests the court to affirm the commission's orders in all respects. Given all of the questions that have focused on the definition of service, I'd like to pick up there. Service involves both delivery and measurement. Those are independent services and concepts, and they are not necessarily sequential. It is certainly possible, and in fact, I don't know that it's in the record, but it certainly is possible, if not practical, for the utility to measure electricity that is subsequently delivered when it's leaving the utility or somewhere prior to when it reaches the customer's property. So those can be independent. Judge Smith, you had an excellent example with the furniture delivery. The furniture could be delivered at the door of the home, or it could be brought into the home, assembled, and put in place. Both so those constitute delivery.
Could you speak, though, then how that intersects with, and I'll just get back to my same question. I think that the argument is, I mean, maybe I'm making it a little bit differently, is that service and subdivision 0.02 subdivision 6 can't mean going like into the home because service later is the monopoly right that an utility has. And everyone agrees that they're not seeking monopoly, right? And so we're talking about a statutory, what the meaning of the statute is. So tell me, like, is it necessary, the argument that, I want you to address that, and I want to say, ask you, if service means, if the subdivision 6 service meaning actually carries through to the meaning in 0.38, does that mean that the commission is wrong here and it must be reversed?
Your Honor, I, in all respect, I think you added something at the end of the question that was a little bit different. So let me divide it up. First of all, with regard to the division the definition in 216B.02, subdivision 6, service. Delivery certainly can go on to the customer's premises. That is certainly possible. The fact of the matter is the utility's general offering stops at the meter. That's what we're interested in doing. That's not the extent to which service could be provided or could be regulated, but that's typically or generally what we do. But there are instances where we do own and maintain property or equipment on the customer site, and we refer to the Saver Switch program, There are also instances where we provide services in addition or apart from equipment. And the Minnegasco case is an excellent case. Judge Connolly, you've referred to it, and the focus has been on whether or not the program to maintain the customer's appliances constitutes a service. And the PUC properly held it does not, but it went on to say that the Leak Investigation Services program does. Now that's a program that occurs on the customer's property and relates to the customer's infrastructure, if for lack of a better word, and that constitutes service. So Minnegasco is right on point, demonstrating that services and the delivery of those services can go beyond the meter. The fact that it's not commonly done is a different matter. With regard to your question, the second part of your question, Your Honor, Judge Smith, about the monopoly, providing those services on the customer's property does not extend the monopoly except as to other public utilities. And in fact, if you review the definition of public utility at 216B02 subdivision 4, that's quite clear and quite important for two reasons. First of all, it does not exclude or impose a monopoly against competition from electricians, manufacturers of equipment, the suppliers of other kinds of infrastructure, because they do not provide electricity at retail. They don't produce it and they don't sell it. So we don't have a monopoly as to any of those parties. The only monopoly would be with regard to another public utility. And that's where 216.38 subdivision 4B, the definition of electric service. And I would draw a distinction between service generally applied to the chapter and electric service, that is a phrase that only applies to sections 216B, 37 through 44. And that goes to the monopoly. That goes to the service area that is allocated among public utilities, but it does not impose some monopoly whenever a public utility is providing a service that would exclude all others. It only applies with regard to other public utilities. With regard to one further point about competition, not only does the definition of public utility under 216B02 subdivision 4 clarify that public utilities do not include electricians and so forth, but with regard to this particular policy by the legislature, the policy to promote EV transportation adoption, the legislature further amended public utility to make sure that public utilities did not include, quote, a retail seller of electricity used to recharge a battery that powers an electric vehicle that is not otherwise a public utility under this chapter. So the legislature even went further to say, insofar as a public utility is providing these services with regard to EV adoption, it does not exclude or does not impose a restriction on other non-public utilities.
So, Council, you would, I guess, under, it seems a slightly, I guess, different position. That's why I wanted to test this a little bit from the PUC's position. I guess your position is, in fact, I don't know why anyone would want to do it, but if there were a competing public utility wanted to come in and offer the infrastructure, under your theory, they could not do so because it's within an exclusive service area.
Your Honor, I didn't hear the audio for the last 10 seconds.
Oh, shoot. Okay. So I guess my question was, so your position, as you're describing, is even though they may never want to, theoretically, that the 0.40 would preclude other public utilities from coming in and selling the infrastructure.
In their service area.
In XL service area.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And that's the only relevance of the subsequent electric service provision that you've referred to. The other point I wanted to make with regard to the record and concerns about monopolies and competitions, there is no record of any concern expressed by any actual or potential competitors with respect to these pilot programs. On the contrary, the programs were designed very carefully to foster and encourage partnerships and participations by other entities, particularly those who supply the charging equipment. And those are built into the program. In fact, the charging vendors have fully and enthusiastically supported these programs.
I had one question, and since we're on the record, you know, in looking at the PUC's decision, at one point, you know, relating to the service, they say many modern electric vehicle chargers are capable of measuring the amount of electricity that is used to charge the vehicle, further reinforcing that chargers and associated equipment are reasonably included in the statutory definition of service. You know, that makes sense to me, but I'm wondering, where is that supported in the record? I mean, is there some citation to, you know, some professor of engineering or like some Tesla guy? Do you know where we would find that statement is supported in the record?
Your Honor, off the top of my head, I can't provide you with a cite, but there was certainly a substantial record that was created. And if you wish, we can certainly supplement and provide you with a record to, or a citation or citations from the administrative record.
Well, I'll let Judge Werke, you know, she's running this show. I mean, you can certainly do whatever.
I hit it on mute. I'm not inviting any additional solicitations, Mr. Boyd. And after we confer on this, if we find it necessary to research the file, we'll do that on our time.
Understood, Your Honor. Just one last point. I realize I'm down to my last seconds. There was some discussion about the standard of review. As a general matter, we agree that it's de novo. However, to the extent this court determines that the phrases such as delivery and measurement, et cetera, in the definition of service are technical terms, there is ample authority from this court and the Supreme Court that you ought to pay deference to the agency's interpretation of those technical terms. And from that standpoint, there should be agency deference if you determine, and I think this discussion demonstrates you should, that phrases like delivery and measurement are technical phrases that are well within the expertise, the very deliberate expertise of the agency. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. Turning back to you, Mr. Maratska, you have the last word.
Thank you, Your Honor. Going backwards, I'll start with the reference to deference and technical expertise on service. What that boils down to, Your Honor, is a statement that the commission is entitled to determine the scope of its authority, and it is entitled to deference on any such decision. That's completely contrary to Hubbard and subsequent cases. It's simply not true. When the threshold jurisdictional interest issue is present, de novo review, no deference. Going back up to Mr. Boyd's concession that the actions behind the meter aren't commonly done, the reason is because they're only done in instances where the commission has provided express authority. The SIP statute is an excellent example because the SIP statute provided authority expressly for the utility to own certain infrastructure that varies or controls the amount of delivery. And that right there is the saver switch. That isn't present here. We do not have an express grant of authority in the same way that we do in the SIP statute. Going back to the couch example, what's interesting here is that, and I think we should talk about, is that the couch is only delivered once. It's not delivered to your front door and then delivered again to your front entryway and then delivered again to your family room. It's delivered once. There's one spot to which it is delivered. And then that couch, the electricity is delivered to the meter. That's without dispute. It's measured by the meter. That's without dispute. The issue And what respondents are attempting to say is, well, but we're going to continue delivering beyond that point. And we get to deliver to the ultimate electricity consuming device. That is not expressly stated in the statute. And what respondents are attempting to claim is that there's some ambiguity associated with silence. Well, if we're incorrect that delivery and measurement occurs at the meter and there is some sort of silence, then even under CWRT, that silence is indicative of a lack of authority. It's not indicative of broad authority. Looking back again to Quest, the mere existence of a broad authorization under statute to regulate does not mean that there is unfettered right to regulate and the regulated entity has unfettered discretion as to how far it can push the bounds of the statute. The legislature states what the agency is to do and how it is to do it. Finally, with respect to intentions that Xcel may have, or that the commission may have regarding transportation electrification and incorporating other parties into the process, intentions, to be clear, are not relevant, because with all due respect, under the Hibbing-Taconite case, this court previously held that agency decisions rendered without statutory authority are void. Intention by itself cannot expand an agency's jurisdiction. Only the legislature can expand the agency's jurisdiction. There's no express statement of authority to regulate beyond the meter. And for all of the reasons that we set forth in our brief, there is no implied authority to regulate behind the meter. And with that, I'll rest unless there are any questions.
I want to thank the attorneys for your excellent briefing. And I can tell you, based on this voluminous record, the argument was very worthwhile and helped us perhaps understand and contemplate what the issues are in a different sense. With that said, the matters are deemed under advisement and a decision will be issued within the statutory timeframe.